Okay, so we are recording. Rebezra, would you be able to make it a drop bigger to enlarge the handout? Okay, perfect. Now we just have to center it. Okay, perfect. Okay, so one of the big topics. Hi, Ruben, how are you? Okay, good evening, everybody. One of the big topics in Maseches Shabbos, and it's also in Maseches Erevin, is the idea of Amira Lenachri. That the question, if Shabbos comes, and obviously I'm not allowed to perform a malacha, so am I allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform that malacha on my behalf? That's considered Amira Lenachri or Amira La'akum, am I allowed to say to a non-Jew to perform a certain malacha? Now, it's a big topic, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to divide this subject into three subtopics. So, tonight's shir is the actual prohibition of Amira Lenachri, the source of the prohibition and the reason behind the prohibition and the differences based on what the reason is. So that's point number one. The next year, which will be in Mitzvah Shem after Tisha B'Av, the following Wednesday, the next year is going to be a topic that we actually touched on once, the idea that if a non-Jew does perform a malacha for a Jew, even on his own, so it's prohibited to benefit from that malacha. So we're going to talk about that. That'll be a separate topic as well. And then the third topic, the third subcategory will be when the exceptions to the rule when you are allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform a malacha. So we're going to divide, it's a big topic, we're going to divide the subject into three subtopics. Tonight's topic is the actual prohibition, where it's prohibited, the reasons behind the prohibition, and to explain some of the halachas in light of the reasons. Okay, this is the prohibition of Amira Lenachri. The Mishnah says in Maseches Shabbos, and it gives us an extreme example. The Mishnah is on Daf Kuf Chaf Aleph in Shabbos. So the Mishnah says that if Lo Yaleinu, if a person's house is on fire, so Lo Yaleinu, this shouldn't happen to anybody. Now, of course, we're not discussing when there's an issue of Sakanas Nefashis. If there's an issue of a threat to life, a danger to life, then even a Jew is allowed to put out the fire. We're not discussing when it's a danger to life. We're discussing when it's purely a question of monetary loss. So the Gemara tells us that our sages were sensitive to the fact that a person is basically in a state of panic when his money stands to be lost. The Gemara talks about a fire. The Poskim talk about if there's a river coming to threaten a flowing, an overflow is coming to threaten the person's property. The Gemara talks about if a person has a barrel of expensive wine or honey or oil that has a crack, that he's allowed to do certain things in order to save his money. The Gemara realizes that the person's in a state of panic, and the Gemara gives the person certain leniencies. So in any case, the Mishnah says in Perek Kol Kisvei, on that Kuf Chaf Aleph 121, that if a non-Jew comes on his own to extinguish the fire, so imagine if the fire department comes and they're going to extinguish the fire, so obviously you're not required to stop them, right? You're not, even though it's Shabbos, and even though you're not allowed to outright ask a non-Jew to perform a malacha, you don't have to stop them. And not only that, you can even announce publicly that whichever non-Jew is willing to put out the fire will not suffer. In other words, you're implying that they'll be compensated well after Shabbos. And the Gemara gives examples of that. So the Gemara gives us a leniency that you're allowed to hint. You're allowed to inform the non-Jews that whoever extinguishes the fire is not going to suffer. In other words, they're going to benefit from that, implying that you're going to pay them well after Shabbos. And the Gemara gives stories about that. In any case, this Mishnah is one of the primary Mishnaic sources to the actual prohibition of Amira Lenachri. That is the Mishnah of Shabbos. Now, what is the basis for the prohibition of Amira L'Nachri? So Rashi on the spot says that the prohibition for Amira L'Nachri is She'osehu Shlucho Mamish. So the Mishnah says, this is item base. Rashi explains the Mishnah that the prohibition against asking a non-Jew to perform a malacha for you on Shabbos is that he's your agent. He's your agent. So just like in other areas of halacha, you can make an agent, and the agent, you can make an agent, and the agent will be able to perform something on your behalf, and it'll be binding on your behalf. You can make the person an agent. So the Chachamim came along and said that if you ask a non-Jew to perform a malacha, we're going to treat it as if the non-Jew is my agent, and on some level, it'll be as if I'm the one who violated the Shabbos. That's how we look at Amira L'Nachri. Now, really, we have the various psukim. The Torah tells us that a Jew could appoint another Jew to be an agent. So, for example, I can appoint you as an agent to separate truma, tithes, from my produce if I'm living in Eretz Israel. Or I can send you as an agent to purchase something on my behalf. And when you make that purchase, it'll be considered mine immediately, effective immediately, because you bought it on my behalf. So there's a concept of shlichas. The Gemara also tells us that a non-Jew cannot be a legal agent for a Jew. So obviously, if you send the non-Jew off to buy something in the store, and he comes to your house and delivers it to you, so then it's mine, there's no question. But if I would ask a non-Jew to go ahead and purchase something for me, and he would actually purchase it, but then he would change his mind and decide to keep it for himself, there wouldn't be any legal recourse on my part to be able to get that particular object, because legally a non-Jew cannot be an agent. It's not an effective agency on behalf of a Jewish principal. However, the Gemara tells us that rabbinically, a non-Jew could be considered a shliach of a Jew. So I'll give you an example. The Gemara tells us in Ezehu Neshech, in Hilchas Ribis, the Gemara tells us that if a non-Jew owes me money, and I tell the non-Jew to lend the money to another Jew with interest, so it'll be considered as if I lent the money with interest, because when it comes to rabbinically, the rabbis consider the non-Jew to be my agent. So Rashi says the same thing over here, that the basis for the prohibition of Amira L'Nachri, the prohibition against asking a non-Jew to perform a malacha on Shabbos, is because on some level, we're going to rabbinically, as a stringency, we're going to consider it as if he's my agent, and then on some level, it's as if I performed the malacha myself. There's another example where Rashi says the same thing. It's a Gemara in Kuf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph. It's coming up in the Daf Yomi. The Gemara says, Mi shehichshich. So if a person is traveling on a Friday, so there are all sorts of halachas about being careful when a person is traveling on a Friday. A person was traveling on a Friday, and he got delayed on his trip, and it's starting to get dark. So now the person's going to be far away from the city. He has to get to the city on Shabbos. So the Gemara tells us that if he has money or belongings, and he's traveling with a non-Jewish companion, so he'd be allowed to give his kiss, his wallet, or in our terms, his suitcase, his luggage, he'd be able to give it to the non-Jew before Shabbos, and the non-Jew will carry it to the city for him on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, my time was sharulei rabbanon lemesiv kisei lenachri. Why did the rabbis allow me to give my luggage, my wallet, my money, my belongings, to the non-Jew to carry it on my behalf on Shabbos? So the Gemara explains, and this is a similar thing to what the Gemara says regarding the fire, Kim luhu l'rabbanan, the rabbis realized, the ein adam maimit atzmi al mamono, that the temptation to save your money is too strong for the average person. Eloi sharislei, if they don't give you a leniency to allow the non-Jew to carry the money to the city, so I'll be tempted to carry it myself, which would obviously be a biblical violation. that would be even more severe. So the rabbis gave me a leniency that I can allow the non-Jew to carry my belongings into the city. This is in extenuating circumstances. I'm allowed to ask the non-Jew to carry the stuff on my behalf into the city. Similar to what we said before by the fire, that you're allowed to announce anybody who puts out the fire is not going to, only stands to gain. You're allowed to announce that. It's a similar exception over here. The rabbis realize that it's, you can't expect someone to let his money, to leave his money behind. So they gave him a special extension. They gave him a leniency that he can ask a non-Jew. It's an exception. But Rashi explains that what's the basis for the prohibition in the first place. So Rashi says the same thing on Kuf Nun Gimel that he says in Kuf Chaf Aleph. Rashi says, Harei hu shlucho l'so'enu b'shabbos. How are you allowed? In the Gemara's question, how am I allowed to ask the non-Jew to carry my belongings into the city? Isn't he now my agent to carry stuff for me on Shabbos, to carry it through the public domain? So again, Rashi says that the basis for the prohibition against asking a non-Jew to perform a malacha is because rabbinically he would be considered my agent. So on some level, it'll be as if I'm violating the Shabbos myself, rabbinically. That's the gether, that's the parameter, the reason behind, the rationale behind the prohibition of Amira Linachri. The Gemara says that these two examples are exceptions to the rule. We allow it anyway because the person can't be expected to stand idly by while his money goes down the drain. So he's allowed to ask the non-Jew. But the basis for the prohibition would have been because he's my agent, and on some level, it'll be considered like I'm doing the malacha myself. So in item Gimel, I summed it up that you see from Rashi that the reason for the Isser, for the prohibition of Amira Lenachri, is because it's considered like he's my agent, and I put in the brackets, L'chumra, this is a stringency, and it's only rabbinic, because Midaraisa, on a Torah level, a non-Jew can't be an agent for, legally, he's not an agent for a Jew for any area of halacha. It's a stringency when it comes to the prohibition. Okay, so now, the question is that Rashi, in Meseches Avodah Zarah, when the Gemara there is also discussing the prohibition of Amira Lenachri, on Daf Tezvav, on 15a, Rashi says that, quote, Masha Asr Li Yisrael, Loimar Lo'evi Kechavim, this that it's forbidden for a Jew to ask a non-Jew to perform a malacha, Mishom Mimtso Chetzecha V'daber Dabar. So there's a beautiful pasuk in Yeshaya, Perek Nun Ches, chapter 58, that goes and describes the sanctity of the Shabbos. So among other things, the pasuk says, Mimtso Chetzecha. You have to observe the Shabbos, let alone we can't violate the Shabbos, but we have to observe the Shabbos, even Mimtso Chetzecha, even from not pursuing your mundane pursuits. So I wouldn't be allowed on Shabbos to go if it's obvious. I'm not allowed to go check out my business. I'm not allowed to read documents that have to do with business. I'm not allowed to engage in transactions. We talked about that in the past. So one of the reasons is Memtzo Chetzecha, that when it comes to Shabbos, besides performing forbidden labor, you have to treat Shabbos as a special day, and you're not allowed to pursue the mundane pursuits. Then the pasuk says V'daber Dover, and you also have to be careful about how you speak on Shabbos. So what does that mean? You have to be careful how you speak. So Rashi explains, Dibor Aser, Rashi explains that forbidden speech is forbidden on Shabbos. That means mundane speech is forbidden on Shabbos. You wouldn't be allowed to talk about your expenses that you have, your ongoing expenses. You wouldn't be able to talk about how much you have to save in order to pay your electric bill. You're not allowed to talk about mundane things. Incidentally, Tosfos there says something interesting, that there's a concept, It's probably above our level, but there's a concept to minimize our speech in general when it comes to Shabbos, right? That's what Tosfos says. But Rashi says the idea is that there's a prohibition against speaking about mundane activities. So now, Rashi in Meseches Avodah Zarah says that the reason you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform a malacha, Rashi says, a totally different reason. Just like I'm not allowed to speak about mundane things, I'm not allowed to make calculations how much money I have in the bank. I'm not allowed to make calculations how much my monthly mortgage is. I'm not allowed to talk about these things. So too, says Rashi, that's the basis of the prohibition against asking a non-Jew to perform halacha, because you're not allowed to talk about mundane things on Shabbos. If I would ask a non-Jew, please turn the light on for me, so you're discussing things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. So the reason you can't ask the non-Jew, says Rashi in Maseches Avodah Zarah, is because asking the non-Jew to turn on the light, you're violating the sanctity of Shabbos by talking about things that you're not allowed to do. Merely discussing prohibitions, you can't do. I'm not even allowed to talk on Shabbos that tonight I'm going to turn on the light. I'm not allowed on Shabbos to talk about that tonight I'm going to water my lawn. I'm going to mow my lawn. I'm not allowed to discuss on Shabbos prohibited activity. So Rashi says, asking a non-Jew to perform a prohibited activity is not any less than discussing the prohibited activity yourself. You're simply not allowed to talk about prohibited activities. Now, so the question is going to be, why does Rashi say two completely different reasons for the prohibition of Amir Lenachri? So in Rashi and Shabbos, on Daf Kuf Chaf Aleph, 121, and also Rashi and Shabbos Kuf Nun Gimel, 153, Rashi says the reason for the prohibition is that on some level the non-Jew is my agent, and it's as if I'm performing the malacha myself. That's how Rashi explains it. Reb Ezra, is the text on the paper, on the screen? Okay, I don't know. Okay, so I don't see it. Okay, Leo, I don't see it. Okay, so Rashi says on Daf Kuf Chaf Aleph and Kuf Nun Gimel that the reason for the prohibition of Amir Lenachri is because he's considered to be my agent. But Rashi in Maseches Avodah Zarah says that the reason for the prohibition is simply because you're not allowed to discuss mundane things on Shabbos. Okay. Here we go. Thank you. So what's going on? Now, I just wanted to make a slight digression, and I want to show that both of these things that Rashi says is grounded in the Gemara, is rooted in the Gemara. So although we don't understand yet why it's necessary to have two reasons for the prohibition, why is it necessary to have the reason of shlichus, that the non-Jew is my agent, and why is it necessary to have a completely different reason, that when I ask a non-Jew to perform a malacha, then you're violating bedaber dover. You're not even allowed to talk about performing malacha after Shabbos. Why is it necessary to have two completely different reasons? So I want to digress, and I want to talk a moment how both of these reasons exist. In other words, both of these reasons are true. And the question is just going to be, why Rashi applied both of these reasons to Amir Lenachri? But let's talk a moment and show that both of these reasons are actually true. So there's a Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Kuf Nun, and this is going to highlight the idea of Daber Dover, that we're not allowed to discuss mundane activities on Shabbos. We can't do weekday or mundane planning on Shabbos. So the Gemara says like this, Lo Yomar Adam Lachavero. A person's not allowed to ask his friend, Sachar Li Poalim, that would you please hire workers for me? So let's say, for example, I'm doing construction, or I need an electrician to come to my house. I'm not allowed to go over to a contractor or to an electrician and say, will you please, I want to hire you to do work after Shabbos. However, a person could say to his friend, do you think you're available tonight? Would you be available to meet? Could you come to my house tonight? Now, even though the worker understands completely well why you're asking him to come to my house tonight, whether the worker, by the way, is Jewish or not Jewish, you're saying to the worker, you're saying to this contractor, this electrician, are you available tonight? Would you mind coming over tonight? That you're allowed to do. So I'm not allowed to say, I actually want to hire you, but you are allowed to say, are you available to come over tonight? Hanira shetamut imi le'erev. Do you think you'll be around tonight? The Omer Rabba Bar Chana, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, my time with Rabbi Shua ben Karcha, what's the basis for this distinction between not being allowed to actually ask the worker to do something for after Shabbos, but you are allowed to say to the same worker, are you available tonight? Are you around? Can you come to my house tonight? What's the reason? Diksiv, because the Pasuk says, Mimtzochevtzecha, that you have to observe the sanctity of Shabbos. You can't engage in mundane things. Vidaber davar, and you can't speak about mundane things. So the Gemara says an amazing thing. Dibur aser, it's only forbidden to speak, to articulate, to actually verbalize things that are forbidden. But hirhor mutter, but you're allowed to think about things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. So it's not the best way to spend your Shabbos. It would be much nicer to spend your Shabbos davening and eating the Suda and learning and engaging and delighting Oinek Shabbos, taking a nap. That would be much preferable ways. But strictly speaking, the letter of the law, there's no prohibition against thinking about mundane things on Shabbos. So if I go over to a worker and I say, can you fix my electricity? Can you fix my circuit breaker after Shabbos? So then you're speaking about things, you're articulating it, you're mentioning the malacha on Shabbos, that you can't do. But if I say to the worker, are you available tonight? Would you mind stopping by tonight? Are you available? That I can do. Why? Because although we both know what we're referring to, but it's in our minds. We didn't speak about it. We didn't say it. And therefore, it's mutter. Incidentally, the Gemara says an interesting story about a pious individual. The Gemara says that there was once a pious individual. It doesn't say who he was. A chassid echad. He walked by his field. He noticed that the fence was broken. And he started doing the calculations in his mind on Shabbos about fixing it after Shabbos, how much it's going to cost and whatnot. And he was so upset at himself that he even thought about it, even though according to the letter of the law it's permitted, but he was so upset that he vowed to never fix it. So miraculously, the Gemara says, a tree, a caper bush, grew and stuffed up the breach in his fence. Not only was the work done for free, but he was able to subsist, to sustain himself on the caper bush that produces various, the Gemara tells us, three different types of fruits and vegetables. So therefore, the Gemara tells us that it's meritorious not even to think about it. But the letter of the law is that you're allowed to think about it. So here's an example highlighting the prohibition of dabar dabar. You're not allowed to speak about mundane things, but you're allowed to think about it. Now I wanted to bring an example to the other aspect of shlichus. There's an aspect of shlichus that if you ask a non-Jew to do something, it's as if on some level he's my agent. The Gemara in Bava Metzia says the following, about Tzadi Yom Adal. Iboy Elohu, they had a question. Mao Shiemer Adam Lenachri Chasoin Parosi V'Doishba. So we know that back in the day, if you want to use your cow to thresh, you're not allowed to muzzle the cow while the cow is threshing. While the cow is engaged, or the ox is engaged in working with the produce, you have to allow the ox or the cow to nibble and be able to eat from the produce while he's working with the produce. It's like it's almost like we discussed last week. It's almost like Tzar Balei Chayim. It's paining the animal. It's aggravating the animal that the animal should be working with the produce and not be allowed to nibble on the produce. There's actually such a halacha with a worker as well. If you hire a worker to work in your garden and he's harvesting, so the Torah says that he's allowed to nibble while he's harvesting. It would be tzar balei chayim to prohibit the animal or the worker, the human worker, from nibbling while he's working. So I have a great idea. I have this prohibition. But a non-Jew does not have this prohibition. Am I allowed to ask a non-Jew to muzzle my animal and thresh with my animal? So I have a farm. I have non-Jewish farmhands, people that work on the farm. So I can't do it myself, but I'll ask my non-Jewish friend, my worker, to muzzle the ox and to thresh with the ox while it's muzzled. That's what the Gemara's question is. Mi amrina, do we say that ki amrina amiru l'nach rishus? So we all know that you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform malacha on Shabbos, but maybe that only applies to Shabbos. Hani mili l'inyan Shabbos iser stila. That's because Shabbos is a capital crime, right? If a person violates Shabbos willingly and he was forewarned and there are witnesses, it's a capital crime. We had it not too long ago in the Torah that the person was mekoshish, the person was gathering or harvesting or bundling, whatever he was doing there, or carrying. And it says there that he's liable for skila. But maybe that's why you can't ask a non-Jew, but maybe when it comes to merely muzzling your animal, which is only a relatively speaking, a minor prohibition of a negative commandment. It doesn't carry with it a capital penalty. So maybe you're allowed to ask a non-Jew. Or do we say that there's no difference? And the Gemara concludes, and it's Paskin in Shulchan Aruch, that you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to muzzle your animal to thresh with while your animal is muzzled, right? Because I'm subject to the prohibition, so I can't ask a non-Jew. Now, obviously, the prohibition against discussing muzzling my animal with a non-Jew on an ordinary weekday can't possibly be based on Dabar Dabar. It can't be based on the prohibition against talking about mundane things on Shabbos. Who's talking about Shabbos? The basis for the prohibition must be that anything I can't do myself, I can't have it done for me by a non-Jew. It's more likely the reason is because of shlichus. By the way, this is the halacha that we once were discussing, that you can't even ask a non-Jew, like a veterinarian, to castrate or to sterilize your animal. We talked about that. It came up again last week. We were discussing about this a different time. Because anything I can't do myself, I'm not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do it as well. That halacha about sterilizing the animal is also brought in that very same Gemara in Bava Metzia. So I want to bring out the point that both points that Rashi says, that you're not allowed to speak to a non-Jew because about a malacha, because you're violating Dabar Dabar, that's certainly true. Because the Gemara says that I can't speak to a worker, you can't articulate, you can't verbalize weekday activity on Shabbos. You can think about it, but you can't verbalize it. So Rashi is right. It's correct to say that if you ask a non-Jew to do something on Shabbos that I'm not allowed to do, I'm in violation of Dabar Dabar. What Rashi says is true. What Rashi in Shabbos says, that the non-Jew is like an agent of the Jew, is also true. Because you see from the Gemara in Bava Metzia that even when it's not Shabbos related, where there's no specific prohibition against talking about prohibitions. For example, I'm not violating anything if I say that I want to eat a cheeseburger, right? I'm not violating anything by articulating that on Shabbos, I would be in violation to say that I plan to turn on a light after Shabbos. But I'm not in any violation if I merely talk about muzzling an animal or I merely talk about eating a cheeseburger. There's no prohibition. So what could possibly be the prohibition against asking a non-Jew to muzzle my animal and thresh with my animal while it's muzzled? I'm not violating anything with the speech alone. So the violation must be based on the fact that the non-Jew doing it at my behest is like my agent, and on some level, it's as if I'm doing it myself. So both things that Rashi says are absolutely true. But the question is, right, the question is that why does Rashi switch off? Why is it necessary to apply both of these reasons? Both of these reasons are true. But what does Rashi gain? What's Rashi's kavana? What's Rashi's intent to apply, to inform me that the prohibition of Issa the Nachri and Mira the Nachri is subject to both of these different prohibitions? Okay, everyone got the question? The question is, why is it necessary to talk about two different prohibitions? Although they're both independently true, but what does Rashi gain? What is Rashi teaching us when he sort of interchanges and he juggles one and the other? What does one do more than the other? So the Achronim asked this question. There's a famous Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer in Hilchos Shabbos, in his Shilas and Tshuvas, Simen Mem Gimel, explains. And there's a lot of debate about why you need both prohibitions. And he says like this. So I quoted it. Lule she'eni kedai. He says, notwithstanding the fact that I'm not worthy. He says this out of humility. The Avnei Nezer, the great Avnei Nezer. Although I'm not worthy, lahachnis roishi ben aharim hagedoylim, to stick my head in between the mountains, like I'm not worthy to stick in my two cents over here. Nevertheless, hayanirali lefarish. It would seem to me to explain why Rashi applies both of these prohibitions to the Amira l'Nachri. Dehine, he explains the following. B'Amira l'Goy, yeshnei isur. That there are two reasons to prohibit asking a non-Jew to do something for you on Shabbos. To ask your non-Jewish neighbor to turn on the light, right? There are two reasons why it's prohibited, like we've been saying all along. One reason is Dabar Dabar, like Rashi says in Maseches Avodah Zarah, on Daf Tesvav. You're not allowed to ask the non-Jew to turn on a light because you can't speak about forbidden activity on Shabbos. You can't discuss your bank account. You can't discuss any mundane activity on Shabbos. So you certainly can't ask a non-Jew to turn on the light because you can't even talk about mundane or forbidden activities. The second reason the Avnei Nezer says is like Rashi says in Shabbos, in two different places, because the non-Jew is acting as a shliach for the Jew, as an agent for the Jew. So now the Avnei Nezer says something brilliant. He says like this, the first reason that you're not allowed to talk about mundane activities on Shabbos, that would prohibit me, that would preclude me, even to tell a non-Jew on Shabbos to perform a malacha after Shabbos. I can't even ask the non-Jew on Shabbos, would you mind turning on the light after Shabbos? Because you can't discuss a prohibited activity on Shabbos. So you can't even ask him to do it after Shabbos. Now, if he does it after Shabbos, it doesn't matter if he's my agent, right? Because I'm allowed to turn the light on myself after Shabbos. So the reason why it would be forbidden is not because he's my agent, but the reason why it would be forbidden to ask the non-Jew to perform on Shabbos, to perform a malacha after Shabbos, is because you can't discuss forbidden activity on Shabbos. So I can't ask my non-Jewish neighbor to turn the light on after Shabbos because of Dabar Dabar, because you can't discuss forbidden activity on Shabbos. Now, let's consider a different scenario. What if I ask a non-Jew before Shabbos to do something forbidden on Shabbos? So I say to the non-Jew before Shabbos, on Friday afternoon, I ask my non-Jewish neighbor, anytime you see me going into a dark room, please turn on the light for me. And when it's time for me to go to sleep, please turn off the light. So I'm telling this all to the non-Jew before Shabbos. So if the reason for the prohibition is Dabar Dabar, because you're not allowed to discuss forbidden things on Shabbos, I'm not discussing it on Shabbos. I said it before Shabbos. But if the reason is because the non-Jew is my agent, because he's following my instructions, so then it's irrelevant that I told him to do it before Shabbos, because I told him before Shabbos to do it on Shabbos. So he's, in a sense, my agent to turn the light on and off on Shabbos. So on some level, it'll be as if I'm turning on the light or turning off the light myself. So that's why I can't ask the non-Jew before Shabbos to do malacha on Shabbos. So again, if I talk to the non-Jew on Shabbos and I say, please turn the light on or off for me after Shabbos. Like imagine if on Shabbos, I say to my lights are all on and I'm going to be going and I'm going to go be visiting someone else on the other side of town. So I plan to walk and make the trek on Shabbos afternoon to the other side of town. And then I'm going to stay overnight at my friend's house on the other side of town. So I asked my non-Jewish neighbor, would you mind turning off my lights for me after Shabbos? I'm asking you now. I don't want you to do it now. I want you to do it after Shabbos because I'm not going to be around after Shabbos. So what could possibly be wrong? He's not going to do it on Shabbos. But the answer is I'm violating Dabar Dabar. You're not allowed to talk about forbidden things on Shabbos. That's why Rashi needed that reason to prohibit, to explain why it's forbidden to even ask the non-Jew on Shabbos to do it after Shabbos. What about the other way around? What if you're not going to be home at the beginning of Shabbos, so you call up your non-Jewish neighbor before Shabbos and say, would you mind turning on my lights for me or turning off the lights for me Friday night because I'm not going to be around? So you can't do that either. Why not? I'm not violating Dabar Dabar because the talking is being done before Shabbos, but I am violating Shlichus because the non-Jew is doing it at my behest with my instructions on Shabbos. So that's the reason for the prohibition of Shlichus. That's where the prohibition of Shlichus comes in. If I ask the non-Jew on Shabbos to perform a malacha for me on Shabbos, says the Avnei Nezer, that you're violating both reasons. You're talking about prohibited activity on Shabbos, and when the non-Jew goes ahead and does it, so he's going to be your agent, and it'll be as if you did it yourself on some level, rabbinically, on Shabbos. So the Avnei Nezer has this brilliant explanation that the reason Rashi says that there are two different reasons for the prohibition is because each reason prohibits a different activity. Dabar Dabar prohibits me the talking. It prohibits the speech. whether I'm asking him to do it on Shabbos or after Shabbos. And Shlichus will prohibit, even if I asked him to do it before Shabbos, if I want him to do it on Shabbos. And if I ask him to do it, very good. So my father's asking, why is a timer different than a non-Jew? It's very interesting because Rav Moshe Feinstein, we all know, we talked about this in the past, Rav Moshe Feinstein was very against Shabbos clocks. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says, the same reason why Chazal prohibited Amira L'Nachri back in those days, so Rav Moshe Feinstein is certain that nowadays, if Chazal would have been around, they would have prohibited Shabbos clocks, not any different than Amira L'Nachri, right? That's what Rav Moshe Feinstein says. The truth is, the way we're understanding it now, it's not so simple what Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying, based on the Avnei Nezer, because the Shabbos clock is not violating Dabra Dabra. I set the Shabbos clock before Shabbos, right? The Gemara says that there are plenty of things that you can set, you can put in place before Shabbos. We talked about that, and it can happen on Shabbos. And as far as things going on and off on Shabbos, so it's hard to say that the mechanism is my agent. We know that a human being can be my agent, but a machine can't be my agent. So Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying that in terms of the spirit of Shabbos, he feels that the Chazal would have prohibited Shabbos clocks. But it's hard to put it into the actual prohibitions of what we're discussing. I saw that in the Kodetz Halachas from Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky Shlita, so he says that we can't, he disagrees with Rav Moshe, he says that we can't make that analogy of a Shabbos clock to Amir al-Nachri, because you can't make these kinds of analogies on your own. He thinks that Rav Moshe is only saying that in terms of the spirit of halacha, but technically you're certainly not over Amir al-Nachri by setting a Shabbos clock. If anything, it takes away from the spirit of Shabbos, it detracts from the spirit of Shabbos, but it's becoming more and more common to use Shabbos clocks, and it's becoming more and more mefursim. Okay, that's an interesting point. So Rav Moshe Feinstein made that point. So in any case, let's come back to what we're saying over here. So that's the Avnei Nezer says, that's the reason for both prohibitions. So there are three scenarios. One scenario is asking before Shabbos, asking a non-Jew to perform something on Shabbos. That's a violation of Shlichus. The second scenario is asking the non-Jew on Shabbos to perform something for you after Shabbos. That's a violation of Idaber Dover, that you can't speak about mundane things on Shabbos. And the third scenario, asking a non-Jew on Shabbos to do something for you on Shabbos, that's a violation of both components, that the speech is forbidden, the very speech is forbidden, and when the non-Jew gets around to doing it, that'll also be forbidden because he'll be like, he's my agent, right? So those are the three scenarios, and Rashi's reasons cover all three scenarios. That's the Avnei Nezer. It's a Gevaldika Avnei Nezer. Now, I wanted to say myself, that based on the Avnei Nezer, it becomes very clear the various halachas that are brought in Shulchan Aruch. So let's keep in mind these three scenarios. Asking a non-Jew before Shabbos to do something for you on Shabbos, that's a prohibition of Shlichus. Asking a non-Jew on Shabbos to do something for you after Shabbos is a prohibition of Idaber Dover. And of course, asking a non-Jew on Shabbos to perform something for you on Shabbos is a violation of both components, Dabar Dover and Shlichus. Now, there are some interesting halachas in Shulchan Aruch that become crystal clear now, the rationale behind that, based on this Avnei Nezer and based on the Rashis. So it says in Shulchan Aruch like this. It says in Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, in Aruch Chaim, Shin Zayin, Sif Bey, so this is item Ches in the notes. So it says like this. We can just scroll down to Ches as Rebezer, if you don't mind. We have a Ches, there you go. So now, in item Ches in the notes, I quoted what it says in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. Kol ma shehu asur la'asoso, in the second line. Kol ma shehu asur la'asoso b'Shabbos, anything that we're not allowed to do on Shabbos, asur loimar le'enu Yehudi la'asoso, it's also forbidden to ask a non-Jew to do it. You're not even allowed before Shabbos to ask the non-Jew to do it on Shabbos. Why? Shlichus, like we said, based on the Rashi and Shabbos, based on the Avnei Nezer. So here's the punchline. Avol mutter loy loymar acher Shabbos, but after Shabbos, after Shabbos is over. So imagine if on Shabbos you had to sit in a dark room, the non-Jew didn't turn on the light. Imagine if you have some help in the house, or if you're in a hotel or something, and you went through, you were suffering through the Shabbos because the non-Jew didn't do something to make it easier for you. You're allowed to go over to the non-Jew after Shabbos and say, you know something? Why didn't you turn on the light when you saw that I was struggling to read? Why didn't you turn off the light? Lama lo yasisa davar pleni b'Shabbos Shavar. Last Shabbos, why didn't you turn off the light when you saw that I was having trouble falling asleep, right? So the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama say that you're allowed, they call this a remez, they call this hinting. You're allowed to go over to the non-Jew and say, why didn't you turn off the light last Shabbos when you saw that I was struggling? Or let's say, for example, you left your car, you know, in Montreal or in other places, you have to park on the right side of the street, and then at night you have to park on the left side of the street because they have to plow the snow, whatever it is. So you ask your non-Jewish neighbor, why didn't you offer last week, Friday night, you know that I keep Shabbos, why didn't you offer last Shabbos to move my car to the other side of the street, right? So you're not telling him to do it, you're just asking him, why didn't he offer to do it last Shabbos? The non-Jew gets the message that if this ever happens again, he should offer to do that, right? He got that message. So the Rambam says you're allowed to do that. You're not allowed to go over to the non-Jew on Shabbos and say, right, imagine if my car is parked on the wrong side of the street. I'm going to get a ticket. I'm not allowed to ask the non-Jew on Shabbos, you know, why don't you offer to move my car? That you can't say, right? But after Shabbos, you're allowed to say, why didn't you offer to move my car? And that way the non-Jew will get a heads up that next week, if this ever happens again, that he should offer to move the car. It's an amazing halacha. You can say, Lama lo yasisa davar pleni b'Shabbos Shavar. Why didn't you do such and such for me last Shabbos? Even though the non-Jew understands, based on what I'm saying, that my desire is that next Shabbos he should do it for me, nevertheless, you're allowed to do that. Now, I'm not allowed on Shabbos to say, why don't you offer to do such and such? But I am allowed after Shabbos to say, why didn't you offer to do such and such? So how do we understand this? So based on what we're learning, it's crystal clear. Because if before Shabbos, I say to the non-Jew, why didn't you offer to help me last week? And he gets the message that he should offer to help this Shabbos. So I'm not violating Davar Davar because the statement was made before Shabbos. And I'm not violating Shlichus if and when he performs it for me on Shabbos because he's not doing it based on my instruction. He's doing it based on his own initiative. I just planted the idea in his head that he should offer to do that. But I didn't actually ask him to do it. So as long as you don't violate Davar Davar, and as long as we can't attribute the act to you because there's no Shlichus, there was no Tzivui, there was no command, there was no instruction, so therefore, it would be permitted because he didn't do it al pitzibuya. So that explains why before Shabbos, and the way the halacha says it is after Shabbos, they're referring to the previous Shabbos, after the previous Shabbos, which means before the upcoming Shabbos, you're allowed to hint, they call it, why didn't you do such and such last Shabbos, implying that that's your will, that he should do that for you on Shabbos. Why didn't you bring my lawnmower and put it into my garage last Shabbos? If you saw that I left it out on the lawn, why didn't you move my lawnmower and put it into my garage on Shabbos? You're allowed to do these things before Shabbos because if and when he does it, you didn't speak about it on Shabbos and he's not following your direct instruction, so we can't attribute what he does to you. He's not your shliach. That explains that interesting halacha of the Ramah that you're allowed to suggest, why didn't you do it before? Now, the halacha also says in Shin Zayin, this is item Tess in the notes, in Sif Chaf Beis in the Ramah, V'zel HaShoyne. So this is a quote from the Shulchan Aruch there, in the Ramah. Kol davar sha'asa lemer le'eni Yehudi la'soysa b'Shabbos. So again, anything that you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do on Shabbos, asr lirmez loy la'soysa, you're not allowed to hint to do it on Shabbos. Now, I know that everybody's thinking that isn't there something about how you are allowed to hint? We'll get to that in a minute. But you're not allowed to hint to do it. But you are allowed to hint on Shabbos that he should do something for you after Shabbos. So So we mentioned earlier that I'm not allowed to ask a non-Jew on Shabbos to do something for me after Shabbos. We explained that it's a violation of Dabar Dabar because you can't talk about mundane things on Shabbos. You are allowed to hint on Shabbos to do something for you after Shabbos, but you're not allowed to hint on Shabbos to do something for you on Shabbos. So the Mishnah Berurah explains it's a funny hint. It's not the hinting that we're familiar with thinking about. The Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Berurah explains, what does it mean that you cannot hint? It means, imagine if the candle, back in those days, the candle lighting, imagine if the candles were not burning smoothly because there's like a charcoal on the wick. So what they used to do is they used to flick the charcoal off the wick, and then the flame would burn brightly. So you're not allowed to ask the non-Jew, like you made up a code. You made up a secret password before. You made up a code word before. Wipe your nose. Yikaneach choykmai. Blow your nose. And whenever you say blow your nose, that's a hint, that's a code word for flick the wick, right? Blow your nose equals flick the wick. So now, you're not allowed to go over to the non-Jew and say, you know, it's like you hypnotize the guy. Anytime I say blow your nose, that should equal in your mind, that should translate into flick the wick, right? So you're not allowed to say to the non-Jew, blow your nose on Shabbos, because he's going to flick the wick on Shabbos. But you are allowed to say to the non-Jew, blow your nose after Shabbos. Why? Right? Why? What's the reason for this halacha? So according to the Avnei Nezer, it's gishmak. According to the way we're understanding it, it's great. Because what's the prohibition of asking the non-Jew on Shabbos, telling the non-Jew on Shabbos to do something for you after Shabbos? The prohibition is not shlichus, because he's not your agent, he's not doing it on Shabbos. The prohibition is the speech. So if you couch the speech in permitted terms, you didn't mention anything forbidden, so then there's no problem, because you're not violating dabar dabar. So therefore it's permitted, right? So again, you're not allowed to ask them to tell the non-Jew on Shabbos to do something for after Shabbos. That's because it's dabar dabar, because you're not allowed to have forbidden speech. But if you code it in something permitted, you're not violating forbidden speech. You're also not allowed before Shabbos to give instructions to do something on Shabbos. Why? Not because of the forbidden speech, because it's before Shabbos. The reason is because of the agency. So if you didn't give him clear instructions, if you just asked him, why didn't you do that for me last Shabbos? You didn't give him clear instructions, so he's not your shliach on Shabbos. So based on this Avnei Nezer, we can understand the three scenarios of the prohibition, and we can understand why you're not allowed to hint on Shabbos to do it on Shabbos, but you could hint on Shabbos to do it after Shabbos because there's no agency. The act is being committed after Shabbos, and there's no dabar dabar, there's no violation of forbidden speech because you coded it in a permitted expression. And the same thing applies the other way, that you can hint before Shabbos to do something on Shabbos. Why didn't you move my lawnmower last Shabbos when you saw it was out in the rain? You can hint because you're not saying it on Shabbos, and when he does it, he's not your agent because you never gave him clear instructions. Now, what's this thing about hinting? The thing about hinting is the Mishnah Berurah in Shin Zayin, Sif Katan Ayin Vav. The Mishnah Berurah says that this the Ramah says you're not allowed to hint on Shabbos. That was when it was Derech Tzivoy. Like I said, blow your nose. That even though you coded the expression, but you're telling him to do something. You're commanding him, or you're instructing him to do something. But ba'oifin that not derech tzivoy. So here's this is the hinting that we're familiar with. Imagine if you tell the non-Jew, if the candle is not burning properly, and you say to your non-Jewish friend, you say to him, the candle's not burning properly, and I can't read. Or in modern day, you say, it's dark in here, I can't read properly. Or you say, it's too bright, I can't go to sleep, right? You didn't mention any forbidden activity. I didn't talk about turning off the light. I didn't suggest that. I simply said that I can't fall asleep because the light is too bright. You have a non-Jewish roommate. I can't fall asleep because the light is on. You didn't talk about turning off the light. You're not violating dabar dabar. I also didn't give a tzivoy. I didn't issue a command. I didn't instruct the non-Jew to do anything. So if the non-Jew decides to turn off the light, he's doing it on his own. It's not attributed to me. He's not my shliach. So that's the remez, that's the hinting that we hear about all the time, that you're allowed to hint to the non-Jew. Hinting, that type of hinting is when you're not even asking the non-Jew to do anything and you're not discussing the malacha. So that's the important point. You can't discuss malacha on Shabbos under Daber Daber, and you can't instruct even without mentioning the actual malacha because of shlichas. But if you're neither instructing and you're neither articulating, even though you're thinking it, you're allowed to think it, you just can't say it, and therefore it would be permitted. That's the type of hinting that we're talking about. The prohibited hinting on Shabbos is when you say blow your nose, where although you're not talking about malacha, but you're instructing him to do something with this code. Now, one other point that I wanted to conclude with was that the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos says another reason for the Isser of Amira L'Nachri. He says it's forbidden to ask a non-Jew to do forbidden malacha on Shabbos, even if you're not commanding him to do it on Shabbos. Nevertheless, you told him before Shabbos, you still can't have him do it. And he says like this, he says, this is Aser D'Rabbanan, K'dei Shelo Tia Shabbos Kal Be'inehen V'yavo Lasos Ba'atzman, because it'll make Shabbos light and you might come to perform the malacha yourself, right? So he doesn't say the reason is because he's your agent, and he doesn't say the reason is because you're violating Daber Daber. He says a third reason, that if we allow you to ask a non-Jew to do malacha, you might come to do malacha yourself. This might be the point that my father was making before, that somebody could theoretically argue that, like Rav Moshe Feinstein actually does, that a Shabbos clock could be against the spirit of the prohibition of Amir L'Nachri, because you might come to do it yourself. So according to the Rambam, it's more readily understandable, the analogy of a Shabbos clock to Amir L'Nachri. But nevertheless, like I said, Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky says that we can't make these kinds of analogies when it comes to Isuri Derabanan. Lamaisa, Shabbos clocks were not around back then. They never were proscribed, and therefore that would not be a basis not to use a Shabbos clock on Shabbos. Even though the Rambam says the reason is because we're afraid Shabbos will become light in our eyes, but some achronim, some say that the Rambam is just giving the reason for the prohibition, but the gedder, but the mechanism for the prohibition, is that we treat it as if the non-Jew is my agent. That's the mechanism. That's the basis for the prohibition. The reason for the prohibition might be because Chachamim don't want us doing things on Shabbos, but the mechanism for the prohibition might be that we treat the non-Jew as our agent. Okay. Yasha Koyach.